Hello, Freedom Nation. It's Jeff here once again with another episode of the Freedom Nation podcast. And on today's show, I've got James Lang. James actually started off as a writer, grew his abilities, and then ended up going to work for another company where he eventually got to the point where he was bought out. So he had his Freedom Day. Went on to start another company in the AI space. And I think you're really going to be interested in how he's done this and then how he's kind of readjusted his life accordingly. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on in just a second.
Welcome to the Freedom Nation Podcast with Jeff Kickle. On this show, Jeff shares his expertise in financial and retirement planning from a different perspective. Planning for your Freedom Day, which is the first day that you wake up and have enough income or assets and do not have to go to work that day. Learn how to calculate what you need, how to generate income sources, and listen to interviews from others who've done it themselves. Get ready to experience your own Freedom Day.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. James, how are you, my friend?
Jeff, thanks for having me. This is a treat.
I'm glad to have you on today. It was a great conversation beforehand. Really looking forward to sharing you with the audience. So let's get started with your story. How'd you get to where you are today?
Gosh, let me pull up my script again. No, life is fascinating, right? You know, it's a journey, yep. And it's one of those things where if you knew where it was going to end up, it might actually have been kind of linear, but there's no way it's going to be linear because you don't know in the moment, you know, what's coming. So anyways, so you mentioned I started off as a writer. That's a very gracious way to describe my beginnings. I started off as, your traditional college dropout. So, you know, left after 1 year, went to a really good business school in the Northeast. They had the good sense to say, yeah, maybe not for us. And so, you know, I left and, started doing a few different things. One was working for Best Buy, you know, on the retail side just to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. But then I got into content writing back in the early 2010s. And that was a time when SEO was king, but you still had this battle between the gamification of like, how do we do all the techie things to make the algorithms like us, even if the content's not great for the end user. And then on my side of the SEO side, I was kind of fighting the battle of like, well, no, let's make the content great for the end user and then do what we need to do on top of that after achieving that to speak to the algorithm. So keep the algorithm happy, but more importantly, the customer. And so what's been really interesting going back, gosh, I mean, I'm getting old now, but back in my day, you know, look at comparing that to where we're at now in the SEO space is fascinating because everyone's like, SEO's dead. And it's like, no, it's the exact opposite. But the difference is that gamification SEO, that's what is dying very quickly. And I'm so glad. I look back at content I wrote for Forbes, Wall Street Journal, all these different places back in the early 2010s. And that content is still performing very highly, even though SEO is dead. And it's like, no, it's the content. If you started with good content, anyways, I'll get off the soapbox on that.
But I mean, it's the algorithm really changed to go your direction. You know, it's okay. I want, you should be providing great content for our reader and, you know, then we'll reward you as a result of that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not that I really knew what I was doing at the time. Like looking back, I can make myself sound really smart and forward thinking, but, again, it's all about framing, but the reality is what was I doing and what was my experience in that space and in that time? And how does that kind of translate today? And so I love when I talk to people who are creative business owners and leaders, they're people who are really good at pulling things out of their past and from a place of humility and saying, you know what? That was an interesting experience. Maybe it went the way I wanted it to, maybe not, but there was value in that. There was something that served me later down the road and I could not have predicted that at the time. But looking back, it's like, thank God I had that experience, right? So, focus on, what you're talking about here on this podcast, your message really resonates with me of like, look, no matter where you're at in the journey, right? So my journey went from, college fuck up to, Best Buy slinging, you got the Wi-Fi, helping people understand the technology to, I'm going to do this content writing thing, tried another startup on the side that didn't work out because, traditions. The only thing I'm missing in my entrepreneurial story is a garage to have founded a company out of. Everything else, yeah. I checked the boxes.
You couldn't afford the garage at the time, so that was the problem.
Yeah, I mean, Craftsman tools used to be good, man. But anyways.
They were,
you know, American made, not so much anymore. So, you know, fast forward, though, to where we're at now or closer to now in the story. And so in my more recent past, I landed at a series of digital firms, one digital marketing firm that's a spinoff from Disney, and then another firm that was focused specifically on personal injury lawyers. So I absolutely did something horrible in a past life because I got to work with dozens of law firms here in Canada and the United States focused on car accidents and ambulance chasing and all the things that, we make fun of lawyers for.
Not just attorneys, but attorneys on steroids at that point. So.
Attorneys with massive egos because they want to be on every bus bench. They want to be the first on Google no matter what. So they're willing to spend incredible amounts of money just to be the biggest douchebag in their town. And I love it because, like, I respect it. Like, if you're willing to get up in the morning and be like, yeah, I'm a douchebag, but I figured out how to charge people hourly for it. I'm going to make sure everybody in the town knows me. I loved it. But the paradox of like doing that and then also like having just previously worked with the Disney spinoff, it's like very different cultures. Yeah. So anyways, it was really interesting. It was a fascinating experience. But and I highly recommend one of the things I think about in my journey along the way, and I promise the story will move along soon. But, you know, I grew up in Virginia Beach, went to college for a year in Cleveland, Ohio, moved out to Orange County, then LA, then Scottsdale, then Denver, right? So Denver now, and more on that in a moment. But the thing is, if you're not willing to move around, either move up or move out in life. And for me, we have this real challenge right now in the gig economy where a lot of people think of themselves as entrepreneurs. I'm thankful the gig economy wasn't around when I was figuring out my version of entrepreneurship because it's so easy right now to get trapped in this thing that looks like entrepreneurship, but you're really just a really shitty employee agreement, you know, covered in entrepreneurship bullshit. So, you know, just be careful if you're out there.
Not a business. Yeah.
Right. And you're doing a job and the employer is shifting all the risk to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, all the costs and all the risk is yours. And all they're doing is telling you how much you get to make after shifting all of that to you.
Yeah.
So be mindful of that when you're setting your prices. And if somebody else is telling you how much you can make, you're probably not in a good situation. So to me, that's not entrepreneurship. That's toxic entrepreneurship. So anyways, that's my soapbox on that. But but again, as you make these kind of leaps, and sometimes the leaps aren't voluntary. Like I was working at this personal injury firm, and huge shout out to my buddy Dan Steiner, who built out Elite Legal Marketing. It's made an amazing firm. I think they still do some work here and there, but anyways, they basically were acquired by a med tech firm in LA, which is how I got to end up in wonderful California. And living in LA, and the ironic part is Chatsworth, where our offices were, was actually historically the porn capital of America. So all these old vacant warehouses that are still there, you know, manufacturing left the country for the most part. And during that time, it's like, what are we going to do with these warehouses? Well, we have the film industry here. Well, yeah, but they've already got their studios. What are we going to do with these studios? And ta-da. Anyways, so for a while, it was an interesting space. But the irony that this particular company, which focused on helping with ED in a way that was not pharmaceutical or surgically invasive, but instead using shockwaves, which can trigger angiogenesis and neurogenesis and help the body repair and restore, using that same technology for guys below the belt, was a game changer. And we didn't invent the technology. That was done by urologists at the hospital. And we had our own urologists on staff. But, you know, we took that technology and we shrunk it to something that could be done at home from the privacy of your home without a doctor's appointment. So, you know, not surprisingly, A, nobody wanted to talk about it. B, you're dealing with a highly regulated environment. So thank God for the FDA and other agencies that make sure that things are safe. But sometimes those agencies, their incentives are for the big guys, the pharmaceutical giants that are making billions of dollars. So the Viagras of the world not saying them specifically, so haha, now you can't sue me. But, you know, the Viagras of the world and people like them, some of them are bad actors, and they will put a ton of money into lobbying the government and other agencies. Yeah. And what will happen is these other people like us, the small guy in the room, with a solution that basically disrupts the pill mill, you know, you have that challenge of all these different things coming at you, and you don't understand where these attacks are coming from. And it's very sophisticated because they have a lot of money. They can hire the best people, really smart people, to come up with plans and campaigns. So, like, we were finding ourselves fighting battles in terms of, like, how to advertise our product, how to achieve the different regulatory compliance we needed, because regulatory compliance in this area is so gray that if you get the wrong person, or the wrong agent on the team looking at this thing that you put out there, they can find a way to justify, well, it doesn't quite match up, even though it's like, well, what does? We don't know, but we know it when we see it, right?
We know it.
So,
it
was a huge challenge. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Yeah. No, that's, I was kind of commenting as we were going. So keep going.
Well, anyways, I'll move along the story so I don't put everybody to sleep. But basically, the exit from that company, so, like, my journey was, okay, I came in as a content writer, took over as director of customer experience. And then as we scaled to doing about $20 million a year, you know, took over as chief operating officer. There's going to be a movie about this coming out, but more on that later, I guess, at a later date. But anyways, crazy story. But we basically helped about 100,000 plus Americans achieve erections without Viagra. So that was exciting. Doing the Lord's work was really popular at family reunions. But got to exit about 2 years ago. And then at that point, like, right in the middle of that exit, it's like, okay, great. What am I going to do next? Like, now I get to like choose. I had some great offers, some different things I was looking into. And then I had this massive health crisis, a respiratory issue that kind of hit me out of nowhere. And it was just so serendipitous that I had moved to Denver for two reasons. One, National Jewish Hospital. I'm not Jewish, but worked near Hollywood and
Whatever.
But, you know, I give them a lot of credit. I really love the Jewish people, the intellect and the focus on medicine and academics. I mean, you can't get a better culture when it comes to knowledge and ascertaining knowledge. Now, whether or not they control the weather, I can't tell you. I just know that I can only get appointments when my doctors are not in Miami. But no, I mean, I love them to death because it's the top respiratory research hospital in the country.
Interesting.
And so you couldn't ask for a better place to get a little wheezy. I started working on it, like, okay, what's this problem? I was having this pain in my chest and it felt like a heart attack, right? And so anyways, we figured it out and we didn't really figure out a solution necessarily, but we figured a series of things that are therapeutic in a sense and allow me to get on with my life. But it's like, great, you know, I'm at this moment where I have all this stuff I want to work on, but I don't know that I'm healthy enough to see it through. And I don't want to sign on the line and tell someone, yeah, dude, I'll put in 60 hours a week. No problem. You know, we'll kick ass and be, you know, I'd love to go there today, but I'm a little bit sick. You know, it's like, that's just not fair to them. And it's, I didn't really want to burn my relationships either. So anyways, I stepped back, and dealing with a terminal illness, you also have to start focusing on your mental health. And what I didn't realize as I unpacked the mental health side of this is, like, okay, I had been on this crazy roller coaster of like putting out fires and building teams and scaling organizations from, you know, five people to 60 and, you know, doing all the things that are crazy that come with that and taking on different roles the whole time. The last thing you do is you focus on your mental health. And what I learned is I was dealing with a combination of PTSD, ADHD, and depression. And I only learned that through like a lot of like therapy and talking with people who are much smarter than me. And so my message around those two things is, of course, take care of your physical health. Warren Buffett talks about you only get one body. But I think we don't spend enough time talking about how leaders can actually weave in mental health support and therefore be better leaders, right? It's not a weakness to need help. Probably everybody you walk into on the street needs some level of help. But the strength of saying, you know what, I'm going to schedule an hour a week to invest in my mental health and talk to someone who knows more than me, who can help me get out of my head and just unpack what's going on in there. And then also working with a psychiatrist to, you know, have the medical side or the pharmaceutical side of it handled. And I can just tell you that being on the other side of those two journeys, I mean, obviously health-wise doing better-ish, but mental health wise, I've never been better in my life. So those things, like that perspective and like being like, okay, well, I thought I would just had to grind away 25 hours a day, you know, and it was like, I don't have time for that. You know, I'll sleep when I'm dead, all that crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's truth to that, but you have to balance moderation in all things, including moderation. Right. So anyways, that's my soapbox for that. But now I can unpack what I'm currently working on if you'd like me to go there next. I know I've done a lot of talking.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, you had the health issues and okay, now you're like, okay, how do I build? And I think this for our audience is really that nice transition to talk about, well, you know, after your exit, what did you do?
Right.
What did you end up doing?
Yeah. So I mentioned moving to Denver for me was amazing for two reasons. The first, health-wise, amazing. But the second, one of my best friends from high school, my buddy Jeff, he happened to already live out here. And so we run into each other. And it's like, you know, we made Eagle Scout together back in the day. Like we did a lot of really cool stuff together. I don't know if cool is the right word for Eagle Scout, but, you know, we got a lot of merit badges. So, but we kind of reconnect and like over a few drinks, we're like, well, okay, what have you been doing all this time? And so we're trading war stories. And it turns out that my buddy Jeff, the whole time I was on like the operational startup, marketing side, doing all those things that you have to do to make money on the internet. He was actually building out AI and big data systems and really getting into it. It's going back to all the way to like 2015. So like that's way before AI and big data were cool. And so like when he first started talking about it, I'm like, Jeff, are you talking about AI right now? Like he doesn't even describe it that way, like the early days, the early stages, because it was so different. There were so many different things. Yeah. And then suddenly these buzzwords got applied to everything. And so anyways, he goes, yeah, at the end of the day, it's basically AI and big data. And so he oversees like in his day job, you know, petabytes of data in the health insurance and medical claims space and personal injury claims. I just can't get away from the personal injury people, but you know, all these different things that all this data that flies around in our insurance space, both auto and health and personal property and whatnot, but not just process and not storing the data, processing claims, but also actuarial analysis of how do you set rates. So whenever my insurance rates go up, I call and yell at them. But you know, but anyways, so we're like comparing notes, and I'm like, you know, Jeff, one of the marketing tools that's worked really well for us when we were trying to sell the Dick Blaster is, you know, if we could give people a quiz that had some interstitials to educate them in between. It's a, like a 5-question quiz. So number one, we get to information about the person that's, you know, the lead. So we make those email flows much more personalized. But two, you know, in 5 questions, what can you really ask? So could we use AI to chat around the questions? So we put our heads together and we're like, that'd be really cool. And so like the first thing we were going to build was this new like funnel idea. And what was great was during that period of time, I was very transparent with Jeff. You know, like, look, here's my health issues. Here's what I can do. I don't have a day job. You do. You know, so you do your thing. But if you think that what I can contribute and the limitations I have, if you're willing to work with me on that, I'll give you everything I got to build something that we go 50-50 on. And so anyways, where our heads went first was, again, this funnel. And the problem with that funnel is we got it to work. But the compute costs, like just to run the test data through, was like $800 in compute. And this is the thing that people aren't really focusing on in AI right now is how much does the thing actually cost? Not how much are you being charged for it, not how much are you seeing their stock price go up and down, but like what is the actual physical cost? Because you don't have to just buy a shovel to dig a hole for AI. You've got to buy the shovel, dig the hole, and then keep repaying for the dirt and all the different resources
over and over, to keep it
going. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm explaining it very poorly because there's a whole lot more to it than that. But just the oversimplification is, you know, the problem that's hiding behind the scenes, and this is why I have zero of my own money invested in AI stocks, is because the cost, the bill has not come due yet. All of this big money has flown in. And so they're trying to acquire customers and use the Facebook model of, you know, the user is the product kind of thing. And that works if you don't have these ballooning behind the scenes tech costs. And the big guys, they're going to be fine. They got that figured out. They know it's coming. They've got a plan. So a lot of these smaller AI guys have no idea. and smaller is relative. Smaller can still be a billion-dollar company, but you know the non-AWS, non-Google, non-Microsofts of the world, you know, and OpenAI, you know, because they're tied in and they're solid. But everyone else, I'm a little nervous for right now in the AI space. So, like I said, I have $0 invested in this space. But where we went was we were like, all right, $800 to run some test data. That sucks. So how do we solve that problem? There's got to be a solution. Other people are running into this. Well, because we were stubborn and because we had the expertise in-house to build our own thing, we realized that once we had built our own thing where we weren't reliant on all these other people, there really isn't an off-the-shelf solution to solve that problem unless you're using the off-the-shelf ecosystem from the start, which has its own limitations. And again, I think ballooning costs in the near future for the consumer. So at the end of the day, we kind of hit pause. And the beauty of both of us being in a financially relatively free space, you know, we could afford to say, you know what, not worried about paying for lunch tomorrow. So let's pause and solve this problem. You know, yeah, let's take care of the people we're already taking care of, but let's really focus on solving this problem. And once we do, then we can come back because we want to build something. We chose the term venture partners very purposefully in the sense that to us, okay, yeah, there's VC, there's incubator, there's startup accelerators, all these different things. And we really want to work with the companies that already are up and running. You know, they've at least got their first customer in the door. They're building something. They've achieved some level of success. They've got a positive cash flow, but they're nervous. They're anxious because they've never been here before, and they don't really know. Well, this AI thing, is it going to wipe out my company or your employees? You know, is AI going to replace me at work? You know, all these really weird tech questions that didn't exist before.
Yeah,
and the landscape's changing so fast. So it's like, well, Jeff, how do we everyone knows there's a wave coming. How do we build a surfboard that everybody that wants to can get on and be okay? And so that's where the whole concept of the venture partners idea came about. So it's, let's focus on people, compliance, technology, all those things, and take what's working for people, make everyone on the team 10 times more valuable, and, go from there. And so we've had a lot of success with that. So again, we went offline for a little bit. Came back, focused on like, hey, we have this AI solution. We talk a lot about AI, but we're more than just like some AI thing. We're really people focused on coming in and walking alongside you as a business owner and saying, all right, how can we help relieve the anxiety, replace fear with knowledge, and help you make better decisions, both from a tech stack standpoint to a people process, compliance side of things, all the things that trip people up, that tripped us up along the way. How do we make something that's like a Swiss Army knife for that business in that space? Because if you're not one of the big Fortune 500s, you're just not going to have access to stuff.
No, exactly. And so many small businesses, it's like, okay, I want to invest some money in this, but I don't even know where to begin. And, so much of it is disconnected, bundle this here and bundle that there. And, very little kind of customized solution for individual businesses.
Yes, a lot of our customers, I mean, we have people in the legal field, the medical space, and the 3PL space, logistics space right now. And so what's kind of interesting with all three of those is they're vastly different businesses, but a lot of the fundamental needs overlap. And so if you can get those fundamental needs correct, and I was on a call, I got pulled into a call with one of our account guys. He was like, hey, can you just hop on and talk to this guy? He doesn't seem like he can afford us. He's a Midwest company. And so I hop on and I'm an a-hole. Like I have no problem just like shooting from the hip and being like, all right, I'm not here to sell you. I'm here to explain the facts of life to you. And so this guy seemed very conservative and polite throughout the sales process. I hop on and I'm like, all right, Cletus, listen. So at the end of the day, your business being in the Midwest, all the tech went to the coasts. All the talent for a while went to the coast. That's changing. It's shifting. But my bet is every tech person you spoke to either gave you solutions that didn't do what they say they were going to do, or charged you out the ass for something that wasn't really needed in the first place, but because it was the highest commission product they could find to sell you, they sold you on that. And then they walked away, when it didn't work or think there was a problem that you had to pay more to get them to pay attention to you again. And he goes, yeah. I was like, all right, cool. Like, We're speaking the same language. Right. So, you know, here's what we should do. We should look at your tech stack, not because we're just a tech company, but we should look at what you're paying for. Because I bet you, if we just look at this huge bill that you have every month and every year for all this licensing and all this technology, I bet we could probably figure out how to cover what we charge every month. And he's like, oh, like, it's like, nobody's ever told me like how they were going to pay for themselves. And I'm like, that's kind of the point. Like, if you're just throwing money at us, we're not really that useful. You know, if we're figuring out a way to make that money, make money for you in all the different aspects of your work, but let's start there. And that's just one tiny aspect. Let's look at your people, your process. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm not sure though about this and that. And I go, look, let's work together. But here's the other thing I want you to tell all the people on your team is, if you've implemented AI and it didn't go well, ask the people on your team, what happened? And if they're honest with you, if you have a good relationship with that person and they're willing to be transparent, what they're going to tell you is, well, I saw this AI thing get thrown at us and it didn't work well. It caused problems, pissed off one of my customers, whatever the case may be. And I thought to myself, I better get the hell out of here because they are bringing AI in to replace me. So now you've got your top performers looking for a place to go. And I said, the conversation needs to be very different. The people that are being replaced by people who understand AI, not by not by AI itself. So if you work with us, okay, we'll solve your tech stack. We'll figure out how to cut down your tech bills. But we'll also figure out how to make every one of your team members 10 times more valuable. And only by doing AI and things around AI where it makes sense. Because we're not just looking to sell AI. We're not an AI reseller. We're the opposite of that, actually. We've built our own stuff to solve our own problems. And now we're coming in saying, well, yeah, we have this thing that solves this problem over here. But tell me more about your problem. So
and that's what we've been able to focus on and build. Yes, for years.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what we're working on now, but I wouldn't have been able to do that without having the freedom to build a company around my limitations. I mean, just out of the last 6 days, I was out of the office for 3 days, you know, just unexpectedly, just health creeped up, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, when you build a team around that, you have the freedom and most importantly, the trust of really good people that you've known for decades, you know, who have your back. It's a game changer. That's the thing for me that's made this chapter of life possible.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it kind of forced you because it would be easier if you didn't have the health issues. You could have just fallen back into the, oh, I'm just going to do, you know, I'm going to do everything or I'm going to be integral to everything because I need to be. And it's kind of forced you to say, hey, I've got to rely on my team that I trust. And, you know, and in the end, that probably makes it a better situation, for the business, for the people that work with you and, you know, just in general for the client.
Yeah. Well, and in thinking about the, you shared with me offline kind of the two kind of groups of people that really listen to this podcast. And so for the first group you mentioned, what I would say is just because you don't have the diploma, the certificate, the paper on the wall that says that you're qualified, and even if the job you're going for says it requires a certain qualification that you don't have, screw it. And the reason I say that is if you can say in an interview, if you can use the formula of, I was on this team, they had this problem. These are the actions I took. And as a result of my actions and the help of a lot of great people, we had this outcome. If you can say that in an interview, there's nothing in there that's, I went to this school, I got this certification, I got an A+ on this test. It totally bypasses all of that. And so if you can make your way to a decision maker and have that type of conversation from a place of confidence and authenticity and, you know, don't make shit up, you know, be honest about what did and didn't work. But when someone understands that, oh, this is a person that can actually think through things, and not only can they think through things, but they've seen these issues before, they've seen similar situations and come out okay, that's 10 times more valuable than a bunch of diplomas sitting on a desk. So that would be my advice.
Honestly, it'd be the person I would hire in a heartbeat.
All day long.
Is the one, you know, that's the question that I ask that I want to know. Can you think on your feet? What, you know, what process has, how does your brain work in these type of situations? Because I don't want to be the one telling you what to do.
Yeah, sorry. I was just going to say, I feel like great leaders, when they approach from that position of not trying to trip up the candidate, but trying to give the candidate an opportunity to genuinely shine, that's when that process works. There's too many people who are interviewers who are like, it's my job to screw up their day. And it's like, no, like that's the worst thing you can do. Because if you're telling the person on the other end that the work environment here is we're going to try to fuck with you all the time, why would they take that job? Yeah. And number one, number two, are you even going to see the best? Like, are you going to see what they could offer?
Yeah. And the people that are smart enough are going to go, no, I'm out of here. I'm not. This is toxic. I'm out of here. So.
Yeah. And the second piece. Well, I got one more. Yeah, if we have a moment.
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. So, yeah. So I mentioned for the first segment of your audience that that was my advice for them. Wow. But my advice for the other side is if you're leading an organization, you've built yourself, you know, what Truman called the crown gem of the U.S. penal system, which for him was the Oval Office. Mm. But if you're in a leadership role and you're stuck, you're like, I built this thing around me. I'm constantly putting out fires. I have these repetitive sources of frustration every week. You know, if you're in that situation and you're in a leadership role, go back and look to your team and figure out who they know. Like when you're looking for hiring, and again, this is on the hiring, the other side of the hiring equation. Wow. But in my opinion, the tools out there like Indeed are absolutely horrendous. They suck in all of these things. And I'll tell you a trick that'll save you a lot of money, which is Indeed, or the Indeeds of the world, I should say, what they're counting on to make a lot of money is they're hoping that the person who runs your candidate search on your team isn't the one paying the bill for that service. Because what they do is they charge you per applicant. And they charge you per applicant after they've sat in your pile for a little bit. So like what we had to do as we were a lean, mean startup, we were really aggressive about the folks coming in to Indeed. We were filtering out the ones we didn't like right away so we didn't have to pay for them. But a lot of these medium-sized companies are getting huge bills from these companies because the person handling it is not financially responsible for paying for how big that pile gets before they look at them.
Yeah.
So just a quick tidbit there. But skipping all of that and bypassing all of that, you know, I have had the most success in life hiring people who were just one handshake away from people I already work with. And so if you can go to your network and go to your team of people that work with you and say to them, look, like, we need someone to help us with these problems. Does anybody know anybody that can? And I have had very few bad outcomes using that process. And I generally spend less and I get a lot more. It's just a better outcome all the way. And plus, when you start to build a team that has relationships outside of work, and we're not building relationships outside of work anymore. We're hiring employees who already have relationships outside of work. So if you leverage that change in the dynamic, you can grow a lot faster and get to a place where you can work on your business instead of feeling like you're stuck in it. But you're going to need some outside help to do it. And that's why we do what we do over at Overlay.
I love it. Love it. Well, let's transition to the fast five questions now, okay?
Yeah.
All right. So first question, you wake up in the morning, business is gone. You have $500 in your pocket, a laptop computer, place to live, food and clothing. What are you going to do first?
So the first thing I'm doing is I'm calling the people in my network that I already have trust and mutual respect with. And I'm figuring out, what are you working on? How can I help? Because if you're willing to say, how can I help somebody else and do whatever it is they need help with, that's step one. Step two, figure out why they're asking you to do that thing. Why are they saying out of all the things on their plate, they need help with that? And if you can figure the why, so for me, when I was content writing, it was, why am I being asked to write all this stuff? Oh, SEO, that's interesting. What's that? And then from there, it was, okay, well, how do I get into SEO? And then how do I get into the agency side of things? And so by learning why, you can climb on your own terms. So that would probably be one piece of what I would do. The other piece is I would probably take that $500 and I would go to the nearest garage sale, thrift store, whatever the case may be. We're holding in our phones access to eBay, Amazon, all these sales platforms that tell you how much something's worth. But your local thrift store, they're not publishing their inventory online. So if you can find stuff there and flip it, you can take that $500 and, you know, go to 1,000, then 1,000 to 1,500, and 1,000, 1,500 to 3,000. I mean, you know, rinse and repeat, and you're going to have some losers along the way. But still, as long as you're conservative with it and focused, and it's not what you're interested in, it's what the market's interested in. And the best part of that $500 scenario you just mentioned is because your basics are covered, you don't have enough to like achieve all your goals, you're going to be forced to build and grow something that the market actually wants. And that's a huge advantage over the people that have a bunch of money and just throw it at what they think the market wants. And sometimes it works, but more often it doesn't.
Absolutely. Love that. What's your biggest business mistake you've ever made?
I've made so many. Let's see.
Pick one.
You asked me to pick one. Yeah. I think my greatest business mistake I ever made was when I was at a mid-level management position at a company. People started to come to me with their problems, and it wasn't always work-related. And I pushed that away. I tried to stop that from happening because it was a time eater. Like, I guess I'm naturally the camp counselor in every group, or the therapist in every group I'm in. and I'm okay with that, but it's a time eater. And so it was like, I don't want this to develop here. And that was the worst mistake I ever made. If you give people the space to share with you their authentic concerns, when I took it the opposite approach of having an open door, there were days now, work-life balance suffered a little bit. It meant that maybe my, you know, 5-hour day that I was hoping to get out of the office early, maybe that turned into a 10-hour day. But what that meant was, okay, yeah, I invested an extra 5 hours that day, you know, hearing people out, listening to their challenges, and not necessarily telling them what to do. People are looking for somebody they can trust and listen. And if you can keep that information confidential and not turn into the village gossip, but if you can kind of allow people to share with you their concerns and their things they're tackling, a week later, a month later, a year later, when something blows up or something doesn't go right, you're going to see the symptoms before the explosion, and you're going to know exactly where to apply pressure. And so, you know, and that's just an old EMT reference when I was doing that for 5 minutes. You know, you apply pressure where the blood is spurting out. That's step one. And that's what you have to do in a business. And so if you have all that soft knowledge that you've gotten along the way, and you all of a sudden you understand how the hell did we get here? And everyone else is scratching their head looking at spreadsheets. The answers aren't in the spreadsheets very often. You know, those are some answers, but the biggest answers, the things that for people focused organizations change, those are people problems, people things. So that would be my biggest learning thing.
Love it. What's your, what's a book that you'd recommend for our audience?
So this guy owes me a Porsche, probably a Ferrari at this point, but I always recommend his book, Jeff Woods. It's The AI-Driven Leader.
Okay.
And for me, because I'm not that smart when it comes to technology. I mean, I'm a nerd, but like I didn't really make a lot of money selling technology. You know, my business partner knows a lot more about that space and I rely on his knowledge. But I was able to catch up to him in a lot of ways by reading that book because it taught me how to look at AI as a thought partner, not a thought leader. And now the book is a little outdated, I'll warn you there, but it still has a ton of value. Yeah. And I hope he comes out with another edition of it that really leans into the current state. But, you know, outdated is a book written a week ago. So, you know, don't hold that against the book. Well, don't skip the book because I said that. AI is just changing so fast.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Exactly. What's a tool you use in your business every day that you, what's a tool that you use in your business that you might recommend?
So there's two things that I use. One makes sense. One is like, what the heck? You're an idiot. But you know, I've been called that before. So, I use Google Docs to keep notes of everything. I find that in this remote world that we work in, if I'm not taking notes around everything that I'm working on and creating a documented record for myself to refer back to later, I'm going to miss a lot of opportunities and I'm not going to be able to be as effective in the moment in the meeting where it's like, wait, what was the deal we made on that? So just thinking on paper, I'm a huge fan of that because if you can't get out of your head, you're already dead. So think on paper, ask yourself questions. I've got a few more tools I can give though. Do we have time for me to give a few more or do we need to move on?
Sure. Go for it.
Okay, cool.
Yep. No, you're good.
So the other one, when you're talking about project management or team management, and the tech guys on our team hate me for this, but I'm more than happy to absorb all the pitchforks and torches because we use Basecamp, which is a project management software that's been around forever. Yep. I've used the Asanas of the world, the Mondays, the ClickUps. They all have their pros and cons. But as a business owner, what I love about Basecamp is once you hit a certain number of seats, you can have an unlimited other set of additional seats and not have to keep continuing to pay. Because at every organization I was at where we use those other tools, the project management software that you get locked into gets so expensive as your organization grows. And so having something where they're saying, look, you know, our tech costs are only so much. And okay, just because we could charge you per seat past, you know, $300 a month or whatever it is now, you know, we're not going to. We're going to say we're going to try to support your business and keep that money in your pocket so you can keep using our software to make more money.
Yeah.
You know, that to me, Signal 37, I believe, is the company behind that. I really love their company culture. And they put out a product that works as advertised and is built to not screw you as you scale financially. So that's another piece. The other one, Firefly's AI. I use it for every Zoom call we're in. I'm able to go in and ask, you know, hey, what did we talk about on random meeting back in the past or whatever? Or what was the answer on this?
Yep.
And so it's a recording software, which is helpful. But it both transcribes the meeting. But the thing that makes that tool different for me from the other ones I've tried is it allows you to record with your phone for in-person meetings and then go back and assign who the speaker was to different things on that transcription.
Nice.
And it's pretty darn good. So I use that really to serve as like a backup for my memory. And so, you know, those are the things, those are three tools. That's enough. I have more, but, you know, those are the things I definitely use every day.
Love it. Fantastic. Last question. What is your definition of freedom?
So I think fear and anxiety are the two things that hold people back more than anything else. I mean, sure, there's bigger problems of like, hey, where's my next meal coming from? Do I have shelter? I'm not talking about that stuff.
Correct.
I'm talking about the things that get in the way of people achieving their goals. And too often, fear and anxiety gets people to make rash decisions or gets them to do things that really aren't in their long-term self-interest. And it can lead really good people down a path of bending the rules a little bit more each day. And I've had people close to me who I would have trusted them with the key to my house. And then I found out that like they kind of got themselves into a system because or a situation that wasn't like they woke up one day and they wanted to be a bad person. But it's like when you check the tape, you're like, why is this person doing that? And so whether it's in your career or in building your business, if you can figure out how to control fear and anxiety by replacing it with transparency, with understanding, with knowledge, you're going to go a lot further and you're going to go there in a sustainable way that doesn't bite you in the ass later.
Awesome. Well, James, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and your advice. It was fantastic. If somebody's interested in connecting, learning a little bit more about you and your company, where's the best place to go?
Yeah, so our website is Overlang. We're really creative. We just took our two last names and threw them together. So it's Over, O-V-E-R, Lang, L-A-N-G.com. And then find me on LinkedIn, James Lang, L-A-N-G. I do my best to respond to every LinkedIn message, you know, in this kind of chapter of life where I'm dealing with a terminal illness. You know, I'm really focused on how can I give back. So if you message me, I promise to get back to you eventually, maybe not right away. And if I can provide value and kind of help you figure out where the logjam is, you know, I'm not asking to pay me. I'm asking you to just reach out and let me help. And so I'd love the opportunity to do that. But if you're a business owner, and you're like, look, I need a partner that I can trust. You know, there's nothing worse than giving equity to somebody that doesn't work out because you're married for life. So I like the venture partnership model we came up with because there's no equity exchanging. You're not stuck with us. You can get rid of us tomorrow. Yeah. But what's more important is it costs about the same as if you hire one new employee to work with us. So if that's in your budget, which for most companies it is, you're going to get a lot more value out of bringing in our expertise around people, compliance, and technology than, you know, just hiring another employee. And hopefully then, as a result, you get to hire 500 more to grow your system, whatever the case may be. But anyways, our website, overlang.com, and then LinkedIn, James Lang on LinkedIn. So, yeah.
Perfect. We'll add that to the show notes page. So, James, once again, thank you for joining us and sharing your story.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Awesome. This has been fun.
Excellent. Folks, let's make sure that you subscribe to the channel and give us an upvote or a comment. And we will see you guys back here the very next time.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Nation Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and all the major channels. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the channel and leave a rating and review. If you have friends and family that could benefit from their own Freedom Day, please share with them. Finally, join Freedom Nation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.